Books on Tape presents The Death of Right and Wrong, Exposing the Left's Assault on Our Culture and Values, by Tammy Bruce. Read for you by the author.
Introduction. Dinner with Dr. Laura. I never really wanted to tell the story I'm about to tell in this introduction. I was urged to do so by Dr. Laura Schlesinger, the vastly popular radio talk show host and best-selling author. Laura and I first got to know each other when we hosted radio programs at the same station in Los Angeles. Against all odds, coming as we do from opposite ends of the political spectrum, she and I gradually became good friends. I admire her greatly, and I think I can say we add some spice to each other's lives. One evening, I was discussing the idea for this book with Laura and her husband Lou over dinner at their home. I was complaining about the increase of moral relativism in society and the left's complicity in it and the hypocrisy and double standards of people in power. Laura, not as cynical as I, was disappointed at how easy lying was for some people. I, however, had the answer. "Nothing is what it seems," I brazenly offered. "One thing I knew," I said, "was that people lead one life in public and another in private. This, you see, is what I had learned from my life experience." Laura, on the other hand, is who she is. There is no strange underworld in the life of Laura Schlesinger. What you see is what you get. She asked me why I believed what I did. She also asked me about my newly expressed interest in issues of morality. I then told her the story I'm about to share with you. Shocked by this story, which I had never told before, although some reporters and others have guessed at it for over 20 years, Laura said I would need to be completely honest about my life if I was going to write a book calling the powerful on the carpet for being hypocrites and twisting issues of morality. If I didn't, she warned, I would be nothing more than a hypocrite myself. Laura appreciated the insight I had gained as I got older about the necessity of values, and she counseled me to make sure you knew how it came about. The convenience of deception. Frankly, I never expected to reach my 36th birthday. Why? 36 was an important milestone for me because it was the age of my first partner, the euphemisms, my first lesbian lover, when she committed suicide. The start of that relationship changed my life, as did its end. It was April 7th, 1982. I was 19 years old and on my way to a lunch date with Brenda Benet, a featured actress on the NBC daytime soap opera Days of Our Lives, and the ex-wife of TV star and producer Bill Bixby. Brenda and I had become lovers when I was just 17. It was a clandestine, closeted relationship to be shared, as she instructed me, with no one. Brenda wanted what she wanted, but she also needed to hide the relationship in order to maintain the image she had created for her friends and, most importantly, for her colleagues and fans. I realize now that this was the message conveyed to my teenage mind. You must not let personal responsibility, let alone morality, get in the way of what you want. It was this duality with which I was conditioned to believe, as I parroted 20 years later to Laura, that nothing is what it seems, people lie about who they really are, and deception is a normal part of life. I had been living with Brenda for nearly a year when, 2 weeks before that lunch date, I had moved out of the house. Life with Brenda had simply become too difficult. Later I realized she was pushing me out with a pattern of behavior that included alcoholism, sexual promiscuity, and the entry into her life of a man who, she told me, regularly beat her. Brenda was, to say the least, self-destructive. She was also an extraordinarily beautiful woman, charming, smart, and charismatic. Her stormy marriage to Bill Bixby had ended in divorce, and she remained tortured over the loss of her son Christopher, who had died at age 7 in a bizarre medical accident. Brenda never truly recovered from that shock, and at one point she told me I was her last hope. A pretty heavy thing to say to a 17-year-old, although at the time I couldn't fathom exactly what she meant. Our lunch date was meant to help us forge a friendship after the ending of our relationship. At least that's what I thought. For Brenda, it was no lunch date. Arriving at her house, I let myself in. I found the door to the downstairs bathroom, the one I most often used, closed and the house in silence. I called out and got no response, although I was sure she was in that bathroom. I tried the door, but it was locked. I begged her to come out. In my teenage mind, I had sensed all along the possibility that Brenda would try suicide, but it was never discussed. In that moment, as I stood in the foyer, I knew we were in trouble. As I backed away from the door, I told her nothing was so awful that it couldn't be handled. I said I would be calling the police. I was more scared than at any other time in my life. I stepped out of the house and closed the front door, intending to go to a neighbor for help. As I went up the steps to the gate, I heard the gunshot. Brenda had heard me, listened to my pleas, waited for me to leave, and then shot herself. None of the neighbors were home, so, in terror, I went back into the house and called the police from there. I sat alone in the dining room, knowing Brenda was likely dead just behind the locked bathroom door. It couldn't have been more than a few minutes before the phone rang. It was syndicated newspaper entertainment columnist Marilyn Beck. Brenda had given Marilyn an interview the week before, and it was scheduled to run in a few days. Now Marilyn was laughing. "Tammy, I just got the oddest phone call from NBC asking me not to run my interview with Brenda. They said she had just killed herself. Can you believe that?" You may be wondering, as I was, how Marilyn Beck had heard of Brenda's death so quickly. This would become one of my enduring lessons about people, Hollywood, and the media. I found out later that when the call for a squad car and for an ambulance went out over the police radio, a local Santa Monica reporter who was routinely monitoring the dispatches recognized Brenda's address. The reporter thought to call NBC to see if they knew anything. It was no secret that Brenda had not really dealt with Christopher's death. And so, when the NBC press person received the call, she presumed Brenda had killed herself. Go figure. In classic Hollywood fashion, the flack didn't bother to call the house to confirm, but thought immediately of the interview she had to stop. She called Marilyn within 5 minutes of my calling the police and 7 minutes of Brenda's death. Welcome to Hollywood. The police arrived soon after that, guns drawn. They asked me where Brenda was and proceeded to kick down the bathroom door. There was nothing much left to do. I answered the policeman's questions. The coroner came and took the body, and the house was sealed. It was over. Brenda was dead at the age of 36. Aftermath. Brenda's suicide made national news, but I kept the truth about our relationship secret. Even now, after all these years, I only feel somewhat comfortable telling about it because Brenda, Christopher, and Bill are all gone, and I feel that I am exposing only myself. There were acts of kindness during this indescribable time that stand out for me. In the weeks following Brenda's death, many of her friends literally came to my rescue, and to my surprise, so did Bill Bixby. I stopped eating after Brenda's death, and after a week of that, I ended up in the emergency room of a Los Angeles hospital. I was eventually admitted, although I was without insurance and certainly didn't have access to funds sufficient to cover a hospital stay. Weeks later, I found out that it was Bill who had picked up the cost of my care. It was something he did not have to do, and yet he did it without hesitation. What Bill did was decent and kind. Unfortunately, I was so used to indecent things that the examples of kindness I received from Bill and some of Brenda's friends did not eclipse the impact Brenda had had on me. In the years that followed, my entire focus was on me, what I wanted, what I was going to get, how much money I was going to make. There were no moral standards in my life. It was a world of self-indulgent narcissism. What was Tammy going to do today? What was Tammy going to buy today? What could people do for Tammy today? I considered myself bisexual through my mid-20s, and boy, I sure acted on it. I was promiscuous and indiscriminate. I also experimented with a variety of drugs during my early 20s. If it felt good, I did it. It was this self-absorption that facilitated a view of myself as a victim. With my narcissism running wild, everything bad that happened to me happened because I was a woman or because I was gay. After all,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?